Would the biz jet bashing stop in Washington if GA would pay user fees? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Poole, who is Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find out more about the group at www.reason.org. Bob has a couple of newsletters that come out roughly monthly, and one is on air traffic, one is on airport security, and we're going to talk about a couple of things in Bob's March edition of the ATC Reform newsletter today. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners.
Always glad to be here, Paul.
Bob, in a nutshell, just because we haven't done this in a while, describe what the Reason Foundation is. What condition in the world would make you guys say, "Hey, we're done. The world's perfect."
That's a pretty tall order. We are a think tank, public policy research institute that really thinks markets make the most sense. Markets, limited government, private property, those sorts of things. And so, if we had a government the size and scope proportional to our size, of something more like what the founding fathers envisioned, I think we'd be happy campers. That's a tall order. That's a lifetime away, I'm afraid.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, Bob, it seems to me as if you've engineered some job security there.
Very long-term job security.
All right, now you're somewhat identified with the idea of privatization of air traffic control in the United States, which, for those of our listeners who don't know, has happened in a lot of other countries.
Well, let me just clarify that a little bit. Commercialization is really what's happened, and it's really what I am advocating, which doesn't mean turning it over to for-profit companies that would charge an arm and a leg. It means reforming in place the existing system, but giving it more autonomy, allowing it to operate more like a business, but under public sector regulation.
Okay, now, with that as a backdrop, we get into this idea of the $25 turbine aircraft IFR user fee,
right?
Which was proposed by Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia as part of the 2007 FAA reauthorization
bill. Which they're still working on.
Right, right. If I understand correctly, the way it would work in a perfect world for you would be something closer to what Canada has, where this money coming in is not tied up with the general budget.
Exactly. It would not go into the treasury of the United States. It would go directly to a revitalized air traffic organization, which would be separate from the FAA, because FAA would regulate it at arm's length. And so all the monies coming in from users would be available both for operating expenses, but also for capital investments. And in fact, in particular, because of a steady, predictable revenue stream, you could bond that just the way toll roads do. And for a huge endeavor like NextGen, if you could bond a significant chunk of the ATO's revenue stream, you could raise the capital up front and make the improvements a hell of a lot sooner.
Okay, now, if we do that without the commercialization of air traffic control, it seems to me we have the worst of both worlds.
Well, that is a potential dilemma, and I agree with you, Paul. I mean, I really think what we need is the whole package. But I think the way Senator Rockefeller proposed this initial $25 next-gen fee is that the legislation would specify that money was only available as a bondable revenue stream for air traffic control for next-gen capital investments. And, I mean, assuming that would be written into the law, even though the money would technically get deposited first in the U.S. Treasury and then be appropriated for the FAA's use, the only use that could be made of it, every 100 cents of every dollar in that money would be available for bonding for next-gen capital investments.
Okay, I follow you that far.
Okay.
And I have to tell you that I don't that philosophically I'm not an opponent of user fees.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why the general aviation advocacy groups are against them, because they consider it, a step down the slippery slope.
Yeah, the camel's nose under the tent or whatever.
Right.
I understand that too.
Okay. Now, you said something in the March newsletter, and I'm going to kind of read it here.
Okay.
You talk about the drubbing that business aviation has been taking in the public forum lately. And you say, for business aviation to alter its current fat cat image will take more than rhetoric. One very positive gesture this industry could make would be to help address the impending budget crunch that threatens timely implementation of NextGen. And then you go on to say that one possible source of that funding is that $25 NextGen user fee for turbine aircraft on IFR flight plans.
Right.
And you say you close that thought by saying supporting the $25 next-gen fee would be a symbolically important step for NBAA and other business aviation advocates. It would make tangible their claim that business aviation is not a luxury but a necessity. And I'm wondering, do you really think that that is a way to change public opinion
in Washington? Well, I think it would really get attention. You know, the more educated level of the public last year and the year before saw many of the commercials put on by the Air Transport Association that also demonized business aviation as the fat cats in their biz jets that don't pay their way in the air traffic control system. You know, they get essentially cross-subsidized by ticket tax revenue from airline passengers. And, you know, I think there have been a number of good studies, the FAA's cost allocation study, a more recent study by the DOT Inspector General, that say, yes, it's correct that business aviation is not a marginal user of the system. It's 10 to 15% of by most activity levels, and it's not paying its way. It's not anywhere close to paying its way. It's not even covering half of the cost on the most generous assumptions. So, you know, knowledgeable people now are aware of that, and for NBAA and other advocates of business aviation to say we're a marginal user, but at the same time, out of the other side of their mouth, say we're an essential business tool that's a vital part of the American economy, so give us a break. I think it comes across as not playing level, you know, being fast and loose with the facts.
Okay, well, in your opinion, those facts don't coincide.
I agree. Yeah, I say they don't coincide because business aviation really is a vital tool for business. It's crucially important. And something as trivial as a $25 per IFR flight in a turbine-powered aircraft would be, you know, you wouldn't even notice it in the hourly operating cost of several thousand dollars. But the PR value, I think, would be enormous for business aviation. It would certainly get noticed if NBAA, which fought hard against that Rockefeller next-gen fee last time around, all of a sudden said, okay, we're going to be statesmanlike and step up to the plate. We want to start paying our way. We are an important part of aviation, and let's act like it.
Well, now, if that happens, Bob, you and I are going to have to start a little internal office pool about how long it stays $25 and how long it's limited to turbine aircraft.
Yeah, very true. But, you know, this would be in this year's delayed FAA reauthorization, which is probably going to be a four-year bill. So it would be, you know, it's very hard to reopen legislation like that in between reauthorizations. So it would be in place at that level for 4 or 5 years. And you know, and the money by law would have to be spent on money capital investments in next gen. So all well and good. I mean, till the next reauthorization, and then who knows where we're going to be in terms of reforming and restructuring air traffic control, and how far along next gen will be by the following reauthorization. I mean, I certainly would intend to be a player in that debate, but that, you know, everybody else will still be well armed and ready to battle it out on the merits of ideas at that point. And you know, I think we need to take these things one step at a time.
All right. One of the other significant implications of next gen air traffic control is its effect on the labor force, air traffic controller labor force.
Right.
I want to talk about
the
comments you made about that in a moment. My guest is Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
$220. Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Poole, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. We're talking about a couple of items in Bob's March Air Traffic Control Reform newsletter. And Bob, you mentioned a March 1st New York Times Magazine interview with Newt Gingrich, in which he seemed very excited about the idea that next-gen air traffic control, in his words, quote, and by the way, you cut the number of controllers by 7,000, unquote. And you mentioned that you think this is a, kind of a bad way to move forward given the labor environment at the FAA right now.
I think that was a terrible tactical mistake on the part of former Speaker Gingrich, who I otherwise admire. The way to get next-gen implemented and get the productivity gains and cost savings that it will bring about is going to require everybody to be on the same page, and that includes the controllers who are in a situation of really feeling aggrieved by the last contract that they believe was forced upon them, and they have also mostly been left out of serious next gen planning. Unlike the situation in Canada, in Europe, where with the commercialized air traffic providers, so restoring, you know, rebuilding that relationship between the air traffic organization and its main employees, the controllers, is a crucial priority. It certainly is a priority of Randy Babbitt, the new administrator, and of Secretary LaHood. So to say that next-gen means cutting the controller workforce in half sounds like war, a declaration of war. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, it's true, but it's not true. It's true in the following sense, that if next-gen succeeds in doubling the capacity of the system, by putting in place a lot of automation tools and productivity enhancers that allow the same number of controllers we have today to control twice as much traffic. I mean, that's a win for everybody. Nobody loses their job. Every airspace user has more capacity and presumably lower unit cost. So that is great. And so the whole assumption going forward for next gen is that air traffic will continue to grow at a sort of historic rate. And the reason we need next gen so badly is because the current system is not scalable. You simply can't just add more tinier sectors and more controllers and have twice as many handoffs in the course of any flight. That's just not a cost-effective way to go, and we don't need, we have the technology to dispense with that. But it doesn't mean anybody's going to get fired. It means, but you know, over the 10 to 20 years we phase in next gen, you simply won't have to hire as many people as you would if the system were growing with the old model. The same number of controllers we have today, about 15,000, should be able to handle at least double the current amount of traffic, which is where most people think we'll be in 20 years.
I guess my thought was, well, first of all, I've heard Newt say other things which lead me to believe that one of his talking points going forward in whatever he decides to do, and he's talked about the presidential race in 2012, is that he's sort of drawn a line in the sand with this union and other unions in terms of their ability to dictate to the FAA how things go.
Right. And I know some people really feel strongly on that point. And I supported President Reagan in firing the controllers in 81 who were on an illegal strike because, you know, he gave them an ultimatum. They didn't come back to work, and it was right to do that. But I think, you know, you have to, I mean, that's one thing for a politician who wants to make talking points to make a statement like that. But in the real world where we have to get everybody on the same page in order to realize the timely implementation of NextGen, I think that it's just really counterproductive to declare war on the controllers and make that the sort of guiding principle going forward of implementing next-gen. If you don't have the controllers on board, it's going to be like pulling teeth to make progress at getting all those changes implemented in anything like a timely manner.
Is it possible, Bob, that these technological improvements, especially, you know, at the pace technology is improving, you know, if we're talking about a 15 to 20 year process to get next-gen done, isn't it possible that we'll achieve a 4x improvement in productivity that will allow, you know, cutting the workforce by 7,000? Because one of the big things going on among the controller workforce right now is that the FAA is scrambling to hire people fast
enough. True. I mean, it's conceivable. I don't have any crystal ball on the technology, and I think everybody is hoping it'll at least double the capacity. And the early reports from the JPDO on NextGen were talking about tripling, and I don't hear the tripling much anymore. You know, maybe because people realize how complicated it's going to be to switch over completely to a new approach. But certainly, I don't see any absolute limit on the potential productivity gains as we get more and better automation tools. We have much more precise real-time information on where exactly every plane is and what its velocity vector is and so forth.
All right. Well, Bob, your newsletter is always interesting reading, even if you know the reader is not on your same page.
Right.
And I'd encourage our listeners to go to www.reason.org and get on the list for this monthly newsletter that comes by email.
Right, and there's no charge, and I'm happy to have feedback from readers. I get a lot, as you might expect.
Yeah, coincidentally, it seems to happen right after you appear on our program here.
not too surprising, I guess. You have good listenership.
Well, Bob, as always, you have some thought-provoking ideas. You're a good sport to be here, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.